much deeper into all aspects of fresh produce, including seasonality and optimum storage techniques.
Just wanted to say a huge thank you to everyone who gave feedback on module one, and just to let you know that there'll be an opportunity to give feedback after this module as well. So if you've got any comments and anything you can think of to make these lessons more user-friendly and also more helpful, I'd really love to hear it. So please make use of that. In this video, we're going to cover an overview of module two. We'll look at best practice storage techniques to maximize the life of fresh produce. We'll look at six quick and easy ways to preserve food at home. We'll look at the biggest game changer for avoiding spoilage. And then we'll talk about the truth about seasonality in vegetables. And finally, we'll look at a hierarchy of fresh produce life expectancy and how you can use this to your advantage. So module two is all about maximizing the life of fresh ingredients. So eating real fresh food is the cornerstone to healthy eating, but fresh ingredients can be expensive, so it's important to make sure they last as long as possible. In module two, we'll go through much deeper into all aspects of fresh produce, including seasonality and optimum storage techniques. But first, I thought I'd follow up our first module with another reason to get your healthy habits in order. So your genetics, a good news story. So do you think your genes are something you're born with and something that you can't change? Well, I used to think the same, and I actually studied genetics at university. But a recent study has shown that changes in our lifestyle, such as our diet, our exercise levels, and our stress levels, can actually change which genes are expressed in our bodies and which aren't, which is absolutely amazing stuff. So in the study, 30 men with low-level prostate cancer were tracked over a three-month period where they changed their diets, exercised for half an hour every day, and engaged in stress management practices such as meditation. And while all the men improved their health as expected, with lower blood pressure and some weight loss, the surprising thing was that they also changed the expression of around 500 genes. So the genes that were related to disease prevention were turned on, and the genes known to be linked to disease, like causing disease, were actually turned off, which is absolutely amazing. So next time you feel like you're feeling a bit hopeless with your habits and feel like, you know, you're not getting anywhere and feel like giving up, remember this study, because any positive changes you make in your lifestyle, they're aren't only going to impact your external health, you know, your weight and how you look, it's actually making a difference on a genetic and a cellular level. So it really has a huge impact to your long-term health. But anyway, back to module two. So first we're looking at best practice storage techniques to maximize the life of fresh produce. So before we get into these, you may recognize some of these recommendations from the free video training series. So if it's doubling up for you, I am sorry, but this stuff is super important. So I wanted to be certain that no one missed out, because there are people in the program who didn't watch the free training videos. And it never helps to hear this stuff again. Never hurts to hear it again. So number one is to select the best storage temperature. So just like the way some people love the heat and others, like my sister Batgirl, are chasing an eternal winter going from ski season to ski season, different vegetables have different preferences for climate. So some things like avocado, tomato, and banana are actually sensitive to the cold, and keeping them in the fridge causes browning, which is also known as chilling injury. I used to give my students a PDF to download that lists a whole variety of vegetables and their optimum storage temperatures, but I've since realized that it doesn't need to be that complicated. Basically, I now go with the rule of thumb that if in doubt, keep it in the fridge, basically. The reason for this is that most chemical reactions slow down at cooler temperatures, and the same with microorganisms' growth. So most things that to do with spoilage are actually going to be slower at lower temperatures. And so in general, cooler temperature equals longer shelf life. There are, of course, exceptions. And there are some produce that I do keep at room temperature. So I thought I'd just go through this. It's a short list. And just so you know, these are what I keep at room temperature, and everything else pretty much goes into the fridge. So first we've got all important potatoes. So I store them in a Hessian sack, and that protects them from, allows them to breathe, but it also protects them from light, which can cause sprouting. Whole avocados I keep at room temperature because they're sensitive to chilling injury, but once they're cut, I usually keep them in the fridge. Garlic I keep at room temperature in a brown paper bag. Onions I keep in a brown paper bag or a hessian sack so that they're protected from the light, but they can still breathe. Tomatoes, they're very sensitive to chilling injury, and refrigeration I find changes their texture, makes them go mealy, and it dulls their flavour, so I usually keep them at room temperature. Bananas are sensitive to chilling injury. Lemons, I love having a big bowl of lemons on the dining room table, but they actually will keep for longer in the fridge, so it's up to you. Eggs I store at room temperature. Eggs will last for longer in the fridge, but I like to keep them at room temperature so that they cook more quickly when I'm, and I eat eggs for breakfast, if not every day, every second day. So if you don't eat eggs on a regular basis, it's best to keep them in the fridge. And the final thing is that anything that's underripe that I want to ripen more, keep that at room temperature, because ripening is a temperature related thing as well. And I also should mention that fresh fish is super sensitive to temperature, so even more so than meat and poultry. And this is because when fish is alive, they're swimming in the ocean or the stream, and their body temperature is much lower than, say, a cow roaming around the field. So that's why fish shops keep their produce on ice, whereas butchers don't. So when you buy fish or seafood, ask the fishmonger to wrap up a bag of ice with them, and then keep your fish wrapped in with the ice in your fridge until you're ready to cook. And this just keeps it cool, as if your fridge is around 4 degrees, it'll keep the fish closer to freezing, to zero, or this is Celsius, and it really makes a huge difference to how long they last. So our next best practice technique is to invest in a good fridge. So when my brother moved to Darwin last year, he gave me his big new fridge. And the thing I was really surprised how much longer most produce seemed to last. So if you suspect your fridge isn't doing its job, it might be worth putting a new one on your wish list and investing when you can. Of course, if that isn't possible, fridges can be expensive. There is something you can do now. Just have a look in your fridge settings, which are usually inside somewhere. Basically, you want to adjust the settings so that the fridge section is as cool as possible without freezing your veg. So just try tweaking the settings until you get to the sweet spot. It can really make a difference. Then best practice technique number 3 is to minimize dehydration. So after temperature, one of the biggest contributors to aging in fresh produce, from vegetables to meat to cheese, is loss of moisture. The refrigeration process removes moisture from the air inside your fridge, making it particularly drying. So because fruit and veg tend to have high water contents, they're very sensitive to drying. So you've probably noticed yourself, if you leave a lettuce in the fridge uncovered, it'll wilt pretty quickly. The solution is to keep your veg wrapped in plastic bags. You can buy bags specifically designed for storing veg, but I haven't bothered trying them. I just save and reuse the bags I buy my veg in from the veggie shop. And it's extra protection, and I keep as many veg as possible in the crisper section with it set on the veg setting. It's a good idea to keep your other fresh produce like meat, fish and poultry well covered, either in the containers or bags they came in, or in your own containers. So moving on to number 4, avoiding condensation and sweating. So of course, too much moisture can be a bad thing, and that can encourage produce to go slimy. Paper towel can be useful to absorb excess moisture without allowing things to get too dry. If I've purchased loose salad leaves or picked excess leaves from the garden, I wash and spin them dry in a salad spinner, and then wrap them in paper towel and store them in a plastic bag I press out as much of the air as possible. This makes a huge difference to their shelf life. But I should note that I don't do this with bags of salad from the supermarket, because they're usually packed with nitrogen gas, which removes the oxygen needed for spoilage organisms to grow, and actually the nitrogen extends the shelf life in that way. So it's also the main reason why these leaves go bad so quickly once you do open the bag, but yeah, when you buy them, just keep them in the bag. Mushrooms are probably the most sensitive veg there is to sweating, so it's best to store them in a brown paper bag in the fridge. And if you do have to buy them from the supermarket in a plastic tray, take them out and free them and pop them in a paper bag when you get home. They'll last much longer. And then another thing for cheese, I tend to wrap it in wax paper or baking or parchment paper. just individually, and then I store it in a larger Pyrex container with a lid. So this way, the cheese can breathe a little bit in the container, but it's not exposed to all the drying air of the fridge. Then best practice number 5, protect from exposure to light. So sunlight can promote sprouting in things like potatoes and garlic, and it can also destroy light-sensitive vitamins like vitamin E. So it's best to store produce in the dark. Of course, your fridge is dark when you're not opening the door. So I keep my spuds, as I mentioned before, in a Hessian sack in my pantry. And then my garlic, I have since started storing my garlic in a brown paper bag in the pantry, because previously I had my garlic hanging on a beautiful plait because I had grown it in the garden. I was so proud of it and it looked really pretty, but it actually started sprouting a lot earlier because it was exposed to the light. So I've since put the bulbs in paper brown paper bags. Then practice number 6, minimize cutting or bruising. So cuts and bruises damage the cell walls of fruit and veg and open them up to spoilage by microorganisms. So exposed surfaces also increase the risk of drying out or oxidation from exposure to the air. So this is why a whole cabbage or a whole cauliflower will keep them much longer than a cut piece. The same holds true for meat, fish, and even cheese. So a whole chicken will keep for longer than a chicken chicken mince or ground chicken. So it's best to leave the trimming and chopping until the last minute if you can. And it's also important to remember that once you do have a rotten piece of veg or something off, it passes on that decay to everything around it. So if you do notice any damaged vegetables, it's best to get rid of them, or fruit, it's best to get rid of them as soon as possible. Then best practice number 7 is to be aware of ethylene gas. So different fruit and veg are either sensitive to ethylene or ethylene producers. So rather than trying to remember which is which, the easiest thing to do is just keep everything in separate bags in the fridge. So just keep like vegetables in the same bag. A special case to note is bananas, which produce a heap of ethylene gas when they're ripening. And this gas actually stimulates ripening in anything that they snuggle up to. So you can use this to your advantage. So if you have an avocado that's quite hard and you want it to ripen more quickly, just pop it in a paper bag with the banana, and the ethylene gas will help the avocado to ripen. But of course, if you don't want it to over-ripen, then it's best to keep them in separate spaces. Best practice number 8, select the freshest produce. So one of the biggest factors that determines how long your produce will keep is how old they are when you take them home. So if you find you're often throwing out veg gone bad, it might be time to change where you shop. Sometimes it's worth paying a little more for super fresh veg from the markets if it means they'll last longer than tight old supermarket produce. Then best practice number 9 is consider home preservation methods. So there are some ingredients that I know are going to keep that aren't going to keep very long in their fresh state. So fresh basil is one thing that comes to mind. So if I know I'm not going to be using basil within about 48 hours, when I buy it, I bring it home and I either make pesto or a basil oil, which will keep happily for a couple of weeks. So of course, there are loads of ways you can use different home preservation techniques to minimize waste, and they aren't necessarily time-consuming or difficult. So I thought I'd just take some time to go through the techniques that I use on a regular basis. So number 1, without a doubt, is freezing. So the home freezer is a pretty amazing invention. It gives us access to a really effective food preservation technique right in our kitchens. So freezing is great for things like meat, bread, cooked foods like soups and stews, some vegetables like peas and spinach, pastry, fruits like berries and bananas. It's also great for things like cooked lentils or cooked rice. So the benefit of freezing is that it usually doesn't change the flavor of the food. The downside is that it can impair the texture, especially in higher moisture foods. But you'll get a feel for that. So I've included some links to some more articles on freezing if you're interested in that in the resources section below the video. So the second preservation technique is chilling, which It doesn't get much quicker than opening the fridge door and just popping something in. But in effect, when we're using the fridge, we are doing a little bit of home preservation. So that meat or cheese would certainly not keep as long if you left it out on the kitchen bench. So it kind of, that makes sense, I think. Moving on, so number three, heating. So when it comes to destroying the two biggest causes of food spoilage, which are microbes and enzymes, high temperatures are the most effective way to do this. This is why cooked produce will keep for much longer than fresh produce. So we'll go into examples of this in module 5, which is all about avoiding waste, when we cover the chapter, the technique of mise en place, so more on that later. Number 4, reducing moisture. So we can by either adding salt or sugar, we can reduce the moisture content of foods and decrease the potential microbial growth. So I tend not to use these at home, apart from making the odd batch of Gravlax, which is preserved salmon, every now and again, but it's a technique just to keep in mind. And the other thing you can do is drying in the sun or in a low temperature oven, or if you have a dehydrator machine, there are other ways of reducing moisture. Again, I'm less likely to use any of these apart from the odd batch of oven dried tomatoes, but it is another technique that we can use. I just wanted to mention it. Number 5, reducing exposure to air. So exposure to air can increase browning through oxidation. If the air is dry, like in the fridge, it can dehydrate food and cause wilting, so which is two very good reasons to keep food covered. So keeping fruit and veg whole, as I mentioned before, rather than chopping is the easiest way to reduce air exposure. But covering cut surfaces with plastic wrap is the next best thing. For liquids or sauces like pesto, popping them in a jar and covering with a layer of oil to protect from the air can be a good trick. And then number 6, our final one, is adding acid. So reducing the pH of a food or making it more acidic makes it tough for microbes to grow and for enzymes to react. So it can be a win-win solution. Of course, acid will dramatically change the flavor and sometimes the texture of food. So the most common examples of using acid are pickling vegetables, but again, it's not a technique I use personally on a regular basis, but some just good one to be mindful of. So if you've got a piece of fresh fish, if you squeeze lemon over it, it will last longer than the same fish left untreated. So moving on, so the biggest game changer. So the trick is to pay attention to when food is in danger. The trick is to pay attention when food is in danger of going bad and taking some action to prevent that actually happening. So remember, you do have the power to stop spoilage and to reduce your waste. So my first tip in changing a game of with fresh produce is when I bring home veg, I quickly gather all the old veg that is still in the freezer from fridge from last week, and I put them all, rotate them all into my small drawer, the chiller drawer that's the smallest one. And so I know that all the older veg are in there. So that's the first place I look when I'm looking for things that need eating up. So that's just one little tip. And then my biggest recommendation for this module is that you develop the habit of having a good look in the fridge every day or so. And you'll be amazed that this just keeps you up to date with what you've got and what needs eating up, and it'll avoid stuff, languishing in the back there and going off. So for me, out of sight is out of mind. So I'm always looking in my fridge to keep on top of it. If you only remember one thing from this module, regular fridge inspections are the biggest game changer for avoiding waste. So, and another note is that a little freezer inspection can be helpful as well. It's something I should probably do a little bit more of. But yeah, focus on the fridge first. So now we'll move on to the truth about seasonality and vegetables. So there's been a lot of talk about food and seasonality over the last decade or so, and maybe too much talk. While I agree that growing your own veg and eating with the seasons is an admirable goal and one I'd like to achieve, I also recognize that it isn't practical or even desirable for everyone to eat that way. We just don't have enough space in the world. So one thing that I think is that seasonality can be a personal preference thing. So I've been reading Nigel Slater's fabulous book, The Kitchen Diaries, and in the introduction, he talks a lot about seasonality. There's his own kitchen garden, his organic CSA veggie box, and the local farmers markets. This man isn't a supermarket fan by any stretch of the imagination. He talks about seasonality not just in terms of summer, autumn, winter, and spring. To Mr. Slater, what we should be eating not only varies by month, by the month, it also varies within months as well. So wow, that really made me think. And then the man, Mr. Slater, went and used tomatoes, fresh tomatoes in the middle of winter, but not once, but multiple times throughout the book. And I was just like, what the? And then it dawned on me, he doesn't have my own rules when it comes to seasonality. So I have a rule that fresh tomatoes are a summertime only thing, whereas he has his own. And who knows, maybe he has access to fabulous tomatoes in the winter growing who knows where. So rather than preach at you about the seasons, I thought I'd share my personal rules about seasonality just to give you a starting place for developing your own, because where you live, the climate, that can make a huge difference to seasonality and which produce you have access to. So after all, it makes sense that these things will vary depending on where you live and where you shop. So just my thoughts about seasonality. So I've got three things here. Number one is that some vegetables should really only be eaten at certain times of the year. And then there are others that aren't so sensitive. For example, I can buy pretty decent broccoli from my supermarket any time of the year, but asparagus is something that I think are only worth bothering with in the spring. To help you with this concept, I've created a list of seasonal and not so season sensitive vegetables, or what I call my year-round veg, and I'll take you through these in a moment. So my second thought on seasonality is that just because something is on special or discounted doesn't mean that it's in season where you live. So one of the things that makes it difficult to keep track of seasonality is the global nature of food commerce these days. I've noticed there are two times of the year when cherries are on special, once in the Australian summer when it's actually cherry season here, and second in our winter when it's summer in the Northern Hemisphere and cherry season in the Northern Hemisphere. Then my thought number three about seasonality is that even if you can buy something out of season, sometimes it's nice to impose your own limits. So I really love the concept of seasonality because it kind of adds extra variety to and gives us change throughout the year. It keeps it fresh. So limiting availability of different foods at certain times of the year makes life and meal planning a bit more interesting. So even though I can sometimes buy a relative decent fresh tomatoes outside of summer, I tend to choose canned tomatoes or tomato paste for cooking when it's winter time, and I save the lovely fragrant fresh tomatoes for tomato salads only in the height of summer, and that's just, you know, a special time for me. That's just me. You definitely don't have to go along with that. So I mentioned before I pulled together a list of my seasonal vegetables. So in summer we have tomatoes, as I mentioned, bell peppers or capsicums, peas, so we're talking about fresh peas, including snow peas and sugar snap peas. Beans are in summer, a summer thing, summer squash, eggplant, also known as aubergine, zucchini flowers, zucchini, and sweet corn. And then in autumn, or the fall, as some people call it, we have pumpkin or squash and wild mushrooms. So in winter we have Brussels sprouts, cabbage, although I do tend to buy it more frequently than just winter, parsnips, turnip, swede or rutabagas, artichokes, celery, apples and a celery root, horseradish, Jerusalem artichokes and kohlrabi. And then in springtime we have artichokes, asparagus and broad beans. So then moving on to what I consider to be my year-round vegetables, so stuff I buy throughout the year. There's a whole heap of them here, and just so you know, the brackets denote, you know, when the traditional season is for these vegetables, just to give you an idea, but I, you know, literally buy them year-round. So we've got avocado, broccoli, broccolini, bok choy and other Asian greens, Belgian endive, also known as witlof, beets, cauliflower, carrot, collard greens, cucumber, celery, garlic, fennel, leeks, lettuce, mushrooms, onions, peas, potatoes, radish, salad greens, Swiss chard or silver beet, sweet potato, spinach, zucchini, and zucchini or courgettes. So moving on, next we're going to talk about a concept called a hierarchy of fresh produce life expectancy. So the thing is that not all veg and fresh produce are created equal when it comes to how long they last, or generally last. Just like people, some people veg fall into the live fast, die young category, while others have the average life expectancy, and then others are happy hanging out with the octogenarian crowd or living to a ripe old age. So we'll go into examples of these three categories in a moment, but first let's talk about how you can use this hierarchy of fresh produce to your advantage. So when you're shopping for meat and veg, the type of fresh produce you choose can make a massive difference to how often you'll have to throw things out. So if you only buy short life produce, you're making it really difficult for yourself to use everything before it goes bad. So unless you're shopping on a, you know, everyday kind of basis. So the trick is to choose a mixture of produce, so you have some that need eating now and others that are fine if you don't get to them this week or even the week after. So when I first figured this out, there was a dramatic reduction in the amount of food I wasted. It's one of those really simple ideas that makes a really big difference. So here a list of my, what I call my James Dean veg produce, my average produce and my long life produce. And remember that these will be included in the ebook at the end of the class, so you don't need to take notes unless you want to. So the James Dean produce, so these are things that tend to last less than a week. So these are things I try and eat up as soon as I can. So I put them on the priority eating list, if you will. So some will be okay for only a few days, whereas others will be, you know, fine for four to five days, but not generally not much longer than that. So what we're talking about is things like coriander, which is also known as cilantro, basil, mint, lettuce, loose salad leaves, avocado, tomatoes, spinach, baby spinach, chard, also known as silver beet, corn, and I've included that more because it's losing flavor. It's still edible, but it's nowhere near as nice as when it's super fresh. Same with peas and broad beans, that, you know, they lose flavour over time. And then asparagus and mushrooms are things that I try and eat up quickly as well. Then in terms of protein, you know, fish and shellfish, all fresh poultry, fresh meat that isn't packed in cryovac, and same with soft cheese is not packed in cryovac. So then moving on to what I call my average life expectancy veg. So these will last for, you know, somewhere between 1 to 2 weeks, and they'll hang around for at least a week in the fridge without any apparent ill effects, and sometimes you'll be able to get even more than 2 weeks out of them, just depending on how fresh they were when you bought them. So that includes things like flat leaf parsley, all the woody herbs, so rosemary, thyme and oregano, broccoli and broccolini, snow peas, Judith snap peas, fresh beans, bok choy and other Asian greens, capsicum, also known as bell peppers, eggplant or aubergine, zucchini, summer squash, chilies, Brussels sprouts, kale, and collard greens. And then in terms of protein, the average expectancy, so things like smoked fish, you know, salmon and trout, eggs, which are stored at room temperature, cryovac fresh meat, cryovac fresh chorizo and bacon, and cooked meats will also last for a week or so. Then the long livers, sounds a bit funny actually. So I've often kept produce in this group for longer than a month, sometimes months. Of course, if stored incorrectly, they're still very perishable. So if you make sure you show them a little care, you'll be well rewarded. So the things that will live for more than 2 weeks, so vegetables are cabbage, cauliflower, celery, carrots, beets, although the leaves will wilt after a week or so. Potatoes, parsnips, celery arc or celery root, kohlrabi, sweet potato, onion, green onions, also known as scallions, garlic, ginger, pumpkin or winter squash or butternut, swedes and rutabagas. And then in terms of protein, long life protein, halloumi, wonderful, packaged soft cheeses, and things like feta and goat's cheese that are in a package often have, you know, shelf life of over a month. Hard cheeses, of course, will last for a very long time, like parmesan. I always have parmesan in the fridge. Packaged smoked fish, eggs, which are, when they're stored in the fridge, can last for, you know, up to a month. Cured meats, dried chorizo, and packaged tofu. And then further notes on the on veg life expectancies. I actually think I've covered this before, so we'll move on. So we're up to your actions. So your actions, one thing I want you to really remember is that nothing's going to change in your life until you take action and do something different. It's great to sit here and watch these videos, but I really encourage you to take this homework seriously and you'll start to see changes. So the first step is to go back to module one and make sure you've completed step two from developing your habits in module one. And then really encourage you to choose at least one new recipe from the list below the video to try out this week. And of course, you're more than welcome to choose more than one if you're up for it. So what's up next? Next, we're going to be looking at module three, which is all about your pantry, one of the very core modules of the class. So see you soon.